The title for the sermon this morning is Banquets Without Borders. This is language stolen from a wonderful writer. Her name is Lynn Tonstad. So I wrote this sermon kind of in conversation with her work. So if there's anything helpful, then thank God for Lynn Tonstad later. I won't say much about the poem on the back side of the bulletin. I'll just read it. It's a wonderful poem. Perhaps the world ends here. First and last lines. It begins, "The world begins at a kitchen table. No matter what, we must eat to live." And then it ends with this line, "Perhaps the world will end at the kitchen table while we are laughing and crying, eating of the last sweet bite." So if you are a poetry person, just enjoy the poem for a while, and the rest of us will have to listen to a sermon. So I asked you earlier what you eat on your birthday. It was funny that someone in the front row said macaroni and cheese. We have friends who had a four-year-old with a birthday yesterday, and what he wanted was macaroni and cheese and Cheetos, and that's what he got for his birthday dinner. I'm not sure what your request was going to be. My birthday was last Sunday, and I asked for fish, which we had. I don't know if it was a family favorite, but it's what I wanted. We had chocolate cake for dessert. It was great. I think everybody liked it. Once, when Henry was younger, we let him pick the cake for his birthday party where he had friends over. And he had seven or eight friends over. This is when we lived in New York. And he wanted carrot cake. He loves carrot cake. Not a single other kid ate cake. So Seth, that was a bad party. All those kids came and none of them got cake. But Henry enjoyed it. Probably said something about Henry's life. Anyway. My mother, her gift to me last week was this big bowl of bran muffin batter. I love these bran muffins. So we've been eating those all week. Just making them as we need them. Now, when I was growing up, she made these bran muffins for our family. We all loved them, but she made them using raisin bran. So everyone else liked the raisins. I didn't like the raisins, so I had to pick the raisins out of my muffins. But for my birthday, my mother makes them with the bran flakes without the raisins. So it's a really special gift. That is love, I tell you what. You really don't have to teach anyone that they need to celebrate special occasions with food. All of us seem to do this quite naturally. When we get together to celebrate, there's food usually there. When we think of Thanksgiving or Christmas or Easter, we think of the food that's going to accompany that day. When we think of birthdays or anniversaries or Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, we think of the foods that maybe our family or our neighborhood enjoys on those days. On these special days, we tend to throw moderation to the wind, and we just eat what we want. We enjoy food as a way of celebrating with other people. Over these past several weeks of the Easter season, our theme has been feasting and banquets. Nothing marks the life of the risen Jesus in the Gospels like his practice of sharing food with friends. He breaks bread with the two disciples on their way to Emmaus on the day he rises from the dead. He shares a breakfast of grilled fish with some disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. Again, the risen Jesus asks, when he meets his disciples in a locked room, he asks them for a piece of fish to eat in their presence to prove to them that he's not a ghost. So these stories about the risen Jesus eating with his followers, sharing a meal, should come as no surprise to us if we've been paying attention to the Gospels. His entire ministry was marked by meals shared with other people. It's at the heart of who he was and how he announced the good news of God's new way of life for us. So today we read from John 2, the wedding feast at Cana in Galilee. John says this was the first of the signs that Jesus performed that caused his disciples to see his glory and put their faith in him. And when you read that story about Jesus turning the water into wine, you're supposed to be just blown away by the abundance, both by the quality of the wine. When the master of the banquet tastes it, he can't believe it. I thought we were saving the cheap wine to the end when everybody's a little tipsy and they wouldn't recognize it, but you've saved the best until last. So the quality of it, but then just the sheer abundance, 120 to 180 gallons of this amazingly delicious wine. In the middle of his ministry is this story of Jesus feeding the 5,000 plus several thousand. And that story too, right in the middle of his ministry, focuses on What an abundance of food there was for everyone. Everyone got to eat as much as they wanted. Everyone got enough to eat. And still, I mean, this is supposed to be silly in its excess. Still, there were baskets of food picked up when they were done. At the end of his life, he will share, on the final night of his life before he's crucified, he will share a Passover meal with his closest friends. He gathers them for a final meal. Before he dies, he wants to be with those he loves, and he wants to leave for them an important practice of table fellowship, of meal sharing that will mark their lives together when he's gone. Now note, in all these stories of banquets and of God's abundance, that there is still a role for you and I to play. We're still involved. At Cana, the servants must do what Jesus says. Fill the stone water jars to the brim, take some out and take it to the master of the banquet. At the Passover feast, the disciples have to help prepare the room and prepare the meal. In the feeding of the 5,000, the crowd, in the person of the young boy, contributes something to the feast. He shares what little he has. That's what Seth was talking about. Even in the way we eat together in worship, in the sacrament of Holy Communion, we bake the bread or buy the baked bread, and we bring the bread and the cup, and we bring ourselves to this table, and we share with one another and with countless others around the world, sharing the same meal in the same way at the very same time. Now, I don't want us to overlook the way the gospel stories remember Jesus. I think this is incredibly important, but it's also very, very easy to overlook. The way that Jesus is remembered shapes our lives. We, as the people who have gathered around him to share in this new way of life, the gospel stories, they could have been, think about this, right? They could have been just sort of a collection of great sermons he preached, right? We could have those as gospels. Here's 10 great sermons Jesus preached, but that's not what we have. They could be all organized around sort of very sanctimonious, sacred, holy, religious scenes from the synagogue worship services that Jesus would have attended on Sabbath days. Well, there's a little bit in there, but not that much. Of course, we know that Jesus prayed and read Scripture. He was an observant Jew, but those activities aren't in the foreground of the gospel stories. What the gospel stories emphasize are Jesus out and about, his relationships, his conversation with a wide range of people in everyday life. I love this. The gospels show us Jesus responding to people's crises. They needed help. He helps them. They show him answering tough questions. They show him sticking up for, protecting vulnerable people. They show him courageous, willing to put himself in harm's way. They show him breaking rules in a way that bothers other people, challenging the violent ways of the Roman Empire. But more than anything else, the gospel stories show us from beginning to end Jesus sharing meals with friends and strangers, and sometimes enemies too. This form of gospel storytelling suggests that we too will find God's new kingdom most readily in our practices of sharing meals with other people. And if this is true, it means that what delights God most is not our adherence to anyone's sort of religious expectations for us, not our ability to believe this, that, and the other thing, not the fact that we can avoid the really bad sins, not the fact that we can keep a morally clean track record. Rather, what brings God delight is to see us celebrating abundance, feasting with other people. What brings God delight is when ordinary people like us share food and conversation, moving towards friendship with lots of other people. Maybe that's why for thousands of years the church has organized its life around the feast of Holy Communion that is characterized by this theme of abundance and celebration and friendship. In Holy Communion, in this feast, we're trained to imagine our lives, to imagine the world in a new way. Not in terms of scarcity and smallness, but in terms of friendship and abundance and sharing and leftovers. This is a banquet without borders, again, to quote Lynn Tonstad. This is a feast at which absolutely everyone is welcome, even those who are strangers to me, even those whom I call my enemies. Like the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes that fed so many in our Holy Communion, the body of Christ is multiplied and enjoyed by thousands and thousands of people in thousands of different places around the globe at the same time. This is a feast without borders. Some of you are in 4x4 dinner groups. I am too. Our family is. And so our group met this past week. And this time, when we got together, Tammy Helm and Laura Agee were responsible for organizing what we were going to do. So we got an email that we were going to have a collaborative Moroccan picnic in Gun Park. You know, part of me was excited. Part of me thought, oh, brother, this is going to be challenging or something. So Laura had traveled to Morocco before, and she had even purchased a pair of ugly orange leather Moroccan shoes, which she wore to prove that she'd been there. In spite of those ugly shoes, it turns out that Moroccan food is delicious. We had been sent some links to, you know, online Moroccan recipes and things, and all of us contributed different things to the meal. We had this wonderful feast at shelter number 5. We had beef meatballs and lamb meatballs and several different kinds of couscous. We had curried chickpeas and home-baked naan bread and other stuff too. It was great. Everybody tried new recipes. And we got together because we wanted to spend time together on purpose, trying to work our way slowly over a meal towards shared friendship. And so we ate, we told stories, and we laughed about food we'd eaten in different places and places we traveled, and it was good. Whenever we celebrate together, our meals are marked by abundance, by enough. It's never going to feel like a celebration if the food has to be rationed out in tiny little amounts. You only get this much. Feasts require the table to be piled with plenty for everyone. Banquets mean that everyone eats and no one leaves the table hungry. When we learn to live in these new ways of feasting with others in God's abundance, we begin to see the world in a different way. Families with plenty of love to go around can open their homes and share their lives with others and quickly become like family. Those who run into financial trouble or difficult times can receive help and resources from other people. The money just happens. It just gets there. It just appears. There's no time wasted on accounting or keeping track of who owes what to whom. There's just this abundance of care and gifts and resources from those who have it to those who need it. It's like this great big banquet without borders. I have been talking mostly about the connections between food and the way we celebrate, but we also eat together as a kind of solidarity. Friendship is also about being allies with one another. Sometimes we share meals to mark our losses. I mentioned that Sunday was my birthday. My present from my wife was to allow me to go on a planned trip to Colorado to meet a couple of my friends, to hike with them, friends from New York. While we were there, we had some great food. We visited several different breweries, but my favorite meal we shared together was this tiny little place called Biju's Little Curry Shop. It was a tiny little place, kind of hole in the wall, just a few tables. It was kind of like Chipotle for Indian food. So you go through the line, you build your bowl, there's rice and lentils at the bottom, and then you get to choose. I chose Kerala fried chicken, which is sort of like curry fried chicken. It was amazing. I never had that before. And then you chose the level of heat in your curry sauce that goes over the top of that, and then there's this spicy slaw on top. It was absolutely wonderful. It reminded me very much of the food that our friend Juby prepares for us, and she's South Indian as well. So South Indian food is a very specific kind of Indian food. But this meal and this whole trip was really a way to connect with a couple of friends who live elsewhere, so I don't get to see them all the time. And all of us really value these chances to get together and sort through life's challenges. I'm older than they are, so I'm solidly in the middle of my midlife crisis as a 47-year-old, but they're a little younger. They're not quite there yet, but they've got their own stuff too. One of my friends has been through a difficult divorce, and the other one is dealing with, late in life, his father became a transgender woman, and he loves his father very much, but that just requires some sorting out. That's a complicated thing to live through. You had a dad and mom growing up, and now you have two moms, so that's a lot of stuff. We had a lot of stuff to talk about. Sometimes what we share with others is not specifically food, but our time and our attention. Just being with other people in a difficult time can itself be a kind of feast or abundance. I was reminded of that this past week with the death of Dee Motorhack. I spent as much time as I could with Dee before she died. Both, she was in the hospital last week and then back at the Franklin House earlier this week. But I know, and it was very meaningful to me, that others of you visited Dee and prayed with Dee and spent time with her and prayed for her. This is its own kind of beautiful banquet, too, just to be surrounded by those who love you all the way to the very end of your life. So to me, this means that there's room at the table, even for those who are dying. You don't get uninvited to the feast just because you're no longer young and strong and healthy and productive. Everyone, absolutely everyone, is welcome to God's abundant care and friendship from beginning to end. I'll tell you one more. And it really is joyful, but it's a little bit difficult and vulnerable for me. By far, the most moving and meaningful meal this week wasn't a meal at all. Monday, this past Monday, was the 2-year anniversary of the death of my best friend. And so on that day, I made time to be with Tom's parents. And when I walked into their house, I saw that the table had been set. I should have guessed this ahead of time. There was a bowl of pretzels and a tall bottle of this Greek liquor called ouzo, and 3 glasses. Ouzo is an incredibly strongly anise-flavored liquor, and I don't know how else to describe it to you. It's about twice as hard to get down as straight whiskey. But this is a ritual. Tom's family background is Greek. He took his Greek heritage very seriously. No one loved Greek cultural festivals like this guy, the Greek food, the dancing, the music, all that. And the ouzo is a big part of these Greek celebrations. And so we sat and we toasted Tom with ouzo and pretzels. You really needed the pretzels to cut the ouzo. That was important. And there was this abundance of something good. Just being together in the wake of a shared loss. The centrality of banquets and of feasting can transform and renew our faith. It moves us away from visions of drab duty and sacrificial obligation to much better images of sharing, celebrating, and laughter around tables piled high with food enough for all. It shifts our religious lives from something that feels church-centered to something else altogether, just to practices of friendship and sharing that mark our ordinary lives. It reminds us that God's primary relationship to us is one of renewed friendship that's marked by extravagant giving and sharing. And it allows us to escape from the traps, the deadly traps of stockpiling, saving, keeping, and guarding into a new vision of banquets without borders. So, as I end, 2 quick practical challenges. The first one is that next week, after our workday, we are inviting our neighbors to a picnic. So it is really valuable for us to extend, as a congregation, to extend our hospitality to our neighbors. So I hope you'll help us do that next week. The other part of the challenge would just be that I want to challenge you to make time this week to share something. It can be a meal. You can dial it down. It can be easier than that. It can even be coffee, whatever. Share a meal, share coffee with someone else as a purposeful act of celebrating friendship or of working at a friendship. I I will bet you that this will be one of the more meaningful and satisfying moments of your week as you live out the good news.